City and Guilds Qualifications. International ESOL Mastery Level C2. New 2009 Practice Paper 2. Part 1. Part 1. You will hear 8 sentences twice. Choose the best reply to each sentence. Look at the example. If you hear, "What's the matter? You look very pale. What's the matter? You look very pale." The best reply is C. Put a circle round the letter of the best reply. Number 1. Number 1.
He's head and shoulders above the rest of the class. He's head and shoulders above the rest of the class.
Number 2. Number 2.
You must be exhausted. You must be exhausted.
Number 3. Number 3.
I tell you what, we'll go halves. I tell you what, we'll go halves.
Number 4. Number 4.
Please accept this token of our gratitude on behalf of the company. Please accept this token of our gratitude on behalf of the company.
Number 5. Number 5.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's not strictly true. I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's not strictly true.
Number 6. Number 6.
Do you mind if I finish what I was saying? Do you mind if I finish what I was saying?
Number 7. Number 7.
I didn't understand a word of that lecture. I didn't understand a word of that lecture.
Number 8. Number 8.
He'll give you the nod when it's time to go. He'll give you the nod when it's time to go.
That is the end of part 1. Part 2. Part 2. You will hear 3 conversations. Listen to the conversations and answer the questions below. Put a circle round the letter of the correct answer. You will hear each conversation twice. Look at the questions for conversation 1. Conversation 1.
I was in the bank today, and there was this woman in there with a small kid. And he was just running amok, picking stuff up, shouting, throwing things around. And the woman took absolutely no notice of him and just carried on talking to the cashier. It was like it was perfectly normal behaviour.
Well, maybe it was for him.
But there didn't seem to be any element of control. It was as if she was saying to herself, "You carry on, do what you like, I don't care."
Well, maybe he had a problem. You know, some kids at that age are hyperactive.
I think the only problem he had was lack of discipline.
But you don't know the family circumstances. The family may have all kinds of difficulties. You can't just take these things at face value.
Well, maybe you're right, but I really don't like to see that sort of thing.
Conversation 1.
I was in the bank today, and there was this woman in there with a small kid. And he was just running amok, picking stuff up, shouting, throwing things around. And the woman took absolutely no notice of him and just carried on talking to the cashier. It was like it was perfectly normal behaviour.
Well, maybe it was for him.
But there didn't seem to be any element of control. It was as if she was saying to herself, "You carry on, do what you like, I don't care."
Well, maybe he had a problem. You know, some kids at that age are hyperactive.
I think the only problem he had was lack of discipline.
But you don't know the family circumstances. The family may have all kinds of difficulties. You can't just take these things at face value.
Well, maybe you're right, but I really don't like to see that sort of thing.
Now look at the questions for conversation 2. Conversation 2.
Can we sort out some dates now, please?
Isn't everything already arranged?
It was, but I'm afraid Henry Brooks from Masters and Jones has cancelled. Apparently something's come up. Something to do with preparing his company report, supposedly. He wants to make it July instead.
Oh. I wonder why he always has to cause some kind of problem. I suppose we'll have to humour him, though.
You could manage the 16th, I think.
It'd make that a very heavy week. I guess I haven't got much choice, though.
Would the 24th be any better?
It's leaving it a bit late. Oh, this is such a nuisance.
Conversation 2.
Can we sort out some dates now, please?
Isn't everything already arranged?
It was, but I'm afraid Henry Brooks from Masters and Jones has cancelled. Apparently something's come up. Something to do with preparing his company report, supposedly. He wants to make it July instead.
Oh. I wonder why he always has to cause some kind of problem. I suppose we'll have to humour him, though.
You could manage the 16th, I think.
It'd make that a very heavy week. I guess I haven't got much choice, though.
Would the 24th be any better?
It's leaving it a bit late. Oh, this is such a nuisance.
Now look at the questions for conversation 3. Conversation 3.
Look, the important thing is whether you want to go ahead or not. Do we have the possibility of a deal, or do I take my business elsewhere? It's a simple yes or no.
Well, I don't think it's as simple as that. There are a lot of things to consider.
Such as what, for instance?
Such as our relationship with Boldings. We've worked with them for years. Any deal we make with you will affect them too. I don't want to spoil that relationship just because we team up with you.
I'm sorry, but you don't seem to be sure where you stand on this. I need an answer to a simple question. Are you interested in taking this forward to the next stage?
Well, yes. I suppose I am, really.
Well, that's a start, anyway. Now, let's talk about Bouldings. As you said, we've been working together for quite some time.
Conversation 3.
Look, the important thing is whether you want to go ahead or not. Do we have the possibility of a deal, or do I take my business elsewhere? It's a simple yes or no.
Well, I don't think it's as simple as that. There are a lot of things to consider.
Such as what, for instance?
Such as our relationship with Bouldings. We've worked with them for years. Any deal we make with you will affect them too. I don't want to spoil that relationship just because we team up with you.
I'm sorry, but you don't seem to be sure where you stand on this. I need an answer to a simple question. Are you interested in taking this forward to the next stage?
Well, yes. I suppose I am, really.
Well, that's a start, anyway. Now, let's talk about Bouldings. As you said, we've been working together for quite some time.
That is the end of part 2. Part 3. Listen to the lecture about globalization and complete the notes. Write short answers, 1 to 5 words. An example is done for you. At the end of the lecture, you will have 2 minutes to read through and check your answers. You will hear the lecture twice. You have 1 minute to look at the notes below.
Globalization is my main theme tonight. The global spread of the term is evidence of the very developments to which it refers. Every business guru uses it. No political speech is complete without it. Yet as little as 10 years ago, the term was hardly used. Given its sudden popularity, we shouldn't be surprised that the meaning of the notion isn't always clear, or that an intellectual reaction has set in against it. Different thinkers take opposite views. Some dispute the whole thing. I'll label them skeptics. According to them, all the talk about globalization is only that, just talk. Whatever its benefits or tribulations, the global economy isn't especially different from that which existed at previous periods. They argue most countries only gain a small amount of their income from external trade, and also maintain that a good deal of economic exchange is between regions rather than worldwide. Others, however, take a different position. I'll call them the radicals. The radicals argue that not only is globalization very real, but its consequences can be felt everywhere. The global marketplace, they say, is much more developed than even 2 or 3 decades ago and is indifferent to national borders. But, according to the skeptics, the notion of globalization is an ideology expounded by free marketeers. The skeptics accuse them of encouraging cutbacks in state expenditure. Not only that, free marketeers would go one stage further and dismantle welfare systems. What has happened is at most a reversion to the world of the late 19th century, when there was already an open global economy. I lean towards the more radical point of view. The level of world trade today is much bigger than ever before, involving a much wider range of goods and services. But the biggest difference is in finance. Geared as it is to electronic money, fund managers and banks can transfer vast amounts of capital from one side of the world to another at the click of a mouse, thus possibly destabilizing what might have seemed rock-solid economies.
Part 3.
Globalization is my main theme tonight. The global spread of the term is evidence of the very developments to which it refers. Every business guru uses it. No political speech is complete without it. Yet as little as 10 years ago, the term was hardly used. Given its sudden popularity, we shouldn't be surprised that the meaning of the notion isn't always clear, or that an intellectual reaction has set in against it. Different thinkers take opposite views. Some dispute the whole thing. I'll label them skeptics. According to them, all the talk about globalization is only that, just talk. Whatever its benefits or tribulations, the global economy isn't especially different from that which existed at previous periods. They argue most countries only gain a small amount of their income from external trade, and also maintain that a good deal of economic exchange is between regions rather than worldwide. Others, however, take a different position. I'll call them the radicals. The radicals argue that not only is globalization very real, but its consequences can be felt everywhere. The global marketplace, they say, is much more developed than even 2 or 3 decades ago and is indifferent to national borders. But, according to the skeptics, the notion of globalization is an ideology expounded by free marketeers. The skeptics accuse them of encouraging cutbacks in state expenditure. Not only that, free marketeers would go one stage further and dismantle welfare systems. What has happened is at most a reversion to the world of the late 19th century, when there was already an open global economy. I lean towards the more radical point of view. The level of world trade today is much bigger than ever before, involving a much wider range of goods and services. But the biggest difference is in finance. Geared as it is to electronic money, fund managers and banks can transfer vast amounts of capital from one side of the world to another at the click of a mouse, thus possibly destabilizing what might have seemed rock-solid economies.
You will now have 2 minutes to read through and check your answers. That is the end of Part 3. Part 4. Part 4. Listen to the conversation and answer the questions. Put a circle round the letter of the correct answer. An example is done for you. You will hear the conversation twice. You have 2 minutes to read through the questions below.
Good evening, listeners. This is Ron Baker welcoming you to this week's Big Questions, our weekly roundtable discussion program. With me today are Andrew Cooney, Professor of Sociology at Edgbaston University, and Emily Hutchinson, editor of Boardroom, the leading management journal. Today we're discussing the role of work in our lives. Emily, surprisingly, perhaps, for someone in your position, you've been quoted as saying that people in the UK actually spend too much of their lives working. What brought you to that conclusion?
It's certainly quite a change. I'd spent most of my 20s focusing almost exclusively on building up my own career in business journalism. Everything was going swimmingly. I loved my work, despite a bad spell in one position. I even managed to fit in getting married and having a couple of babies. I thought I'd got things just right until I got stuck in a tube one day, with nothing to do but think, and realised I hadn't spoken to my children for 4 whole days. I'd only seen them when they were fast asleep. Neither had my husband and I had any time to talk to each other. He didn't take much convincing that the balance in our lives was wrong.
You're certainly not alone in feeling like that, Emily. Studies show a majority of British people now put in substantially more working hours than they did in the more laid-back 60s. In fact, many people are working the kind of horrific hours that would have been familiar to a 19th-century factory worker. The difference is that it is now more likely to be bosses than the shop floor workers doing those long hours.
At least now people choose to work more rather than being forced to.
I'm not sure that's true. There's ridiculous pressure on people to devote their lives to work. Hardly anyone takes a lunch hour now. It's a quick sandwich at the desk. And only 1/3 of men take all the holiday they're entitled to. Women are slightly better, but only half of us take all the time off we should. This puts huge strain on family life.
Yes, but that's still our choice. We do it because we want to earn more.
Well, research suggests that people do it because they're afraid that they won't appear as much of a team player as everyone else. So they do the hours even when they could often actually do the work a whole lot more quickly.
But at least the extra effort is likely to pay off in the long run. Extra work is bound to lead to extra productivity.
That isn't borne out by a number of studies, Ron. A year or two ago, France implemented a 35-hour working week, but their productivity still outstrips ours, even though we work the longest hours in Europe.
What I think is particularly sad is that increasing numbers of people don't just view work as a necessary way of earning a living. They find their meaning in life through work. It gives them their sense of identity. In the past, this would have been provided through spiritual beliefs or family or through other relationships, sometimes through leisure activities. Now, even any social activities people do find time for revolve around the workplace.
But is that really so serious? Work does benefit society, after all. It's not as if people are being selfish or money-grubbing in their approach.
Well, yes, but there is a risk. No company now offers much security as part of its package of benefits. Most contracts are short-term. This breeds insecurity, which makes many people invest a huge amount in their work, in their desire to hang on to it at all costs. Giving your all is what many companies now expect. Those who give it and then find their contract isn't renewed often suffer quite badly emotionally.
So, Emily, when you first decided that you had had enough of work... Good evening, listeners. This is Ron Baker welcoming you to this week's Big Questions, our weekly roundtable discussion programme. With me today are Andrew Cooney, Professor of Sociology at Edgbaston University, and Emily Hutchinson, Editor of Boardroom, the leading management journal. Today we're discussing the role of work in our lives. Emily, surprisingly perhaps for someone in your position, you've been quoted as saying that people in the UK actually spend too much of their lives working. What brought you to that conclusion?
It's certainly quite a change. I'd spent most of my 20s focusing almost exclusively on building up my own career in business journalism. Everything was going swimmingly. I loved my work, despite a bad spell in one position. I even managed to fit in getting married and having a couple of babies. I thought I'd got things just right until I got stuck in a tube one day, with nothing to do but think, and realised I hadn't spoken to my children for 4 whole days. I'd only seen them when they were fast asleep. Neither had my husband and I had any time to talk to each other. He didn't take much convincing that the balance in our lives was wrong.
You're certainly not alone in feeling like that, Emily. Studies show a majority of British people now put in substantially more working hours than they did in the more laid-back 60s. In fact, many people are working the kind of horrific hours that would have been familiar to a 19th-century factory worker. The difference is that it is now more likely to be bosses than the shop floor workers doing those long hours.
At least now people choose to work more, rather than being forced to.
I'm not sure that's true. There's ridiculous pressure on people to devote their lives to work. Hardly anyone takes a lunch hour now. It's a quick sandwich at the desk. And only 1/3 of men take all the holiday they're entitled to. Women are slightly better, but only half of us take all the time off we should. This puts huge strain on family life.
Yes, but that's still our choice. We do it because we want to earn more.
Well, research suggests that people do it because they're afraid that they won't appear as much of a team player as everyone else. So they do the hours even when they could often actually do the work a whole lot more quickly.
But at least the extra effort is likely to pay off in the long run. Extra work is bound to lead to extra productivity.
That isn't borne out by a number of studies, Ron. A year or two ago, France implemented a 35-hour working week, but their productivity still outstrips ours, even though we work the longest hours in Europe.
What I think is particularly sad is that increasing numbers of people don't just view work as a necessary way of earning a living. They find their meaning in life through work. It gives them their sense of identity. In the past, this would have been provided through spiritual beliefs or family or through other relationships, sometimes through leisure activities. Now, even any social activities people do find time for revolve around the workplace.
But is that really so serious? Work does benefit society, after all. It's not as if people are being selfish or money-grubbing in their approach.
Well, yes, but there is a risk. No company now offers much security as part of its package of benefits. Most contracts are short-term. This breeds insecurity, which makes many people invest a huge amount in their work in their desire to hang on to it at all costs. Giving your all is what many companies now expect. Those who give it and then find their contract isn't renewed often suffer quite badly emotionally.
So, Emily, when you first decided that you had had enough of work...
That is the end of part four. You now have 2 hours 40 minutes to complete the rest of the paper.